Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All right, welcome in everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Ryan O back in the fold here in the 904 area code after watching all the big shows up in the NYC. I gave yourself a preview week, right, before you go back up there for real this weekend.
Yeah, back up Saturday morning, and Saturday night got a show, and then Sunday the game, and a rare Sunday night return to Jacksonville.
I guess it is.
I mean, obviously the team comes back every Sunday night, but it's rare that there's a late enough flight for us to get back. So we're going to be hustling to Newark to catch a 9:05 flight Sunday night.
I was going to say the city that never sleeps, but he's going to Jersey, Tony. So
there have been a couple of times in my previous years with the Redskins where instead of taking a right toward the airport hotel, we took a right toward the tunnel.
Oh, dear.
Left toward the tunnel. Left toward the tunnel. Yeah, we went to New York City.
Means nothing to us. Right, left, whatever the case may be. Book of Mormon, not as good as it's cracked up to be?
I thought it was okay. I've seen a lot better stuff.
Have you seen that, Tony?
Yeah. I went and saw it when I was up in D.C. earlier this year.
You liked it?
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it. It's kind of like, it is like watching an hour and a half, 2 hour version of kind of a mediocre South Park episode, is what it feels like, which is funny because I love South Park, so I was laughing a lot while I was in the theater, but as someone who's seen quite a few shows myself on Broadway, it's not a great Broadway show. It's a pretty good Broadway show.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, people I'm sitting around who are older than me were laughing like they're seeing fire created.
I'm sure that made you very happy. Fire
this
created.
Isn't funny? Shut up!
I don't doubt it. Ladies and gentlemen, neither does anyone in the listening audience. All right, Jags-Jets week. And we will talk about the matchup. We'll also talk about kind of with the bye week here or just past your midseason grades for this football team, where you see them, where you can see room for improvement in the second half, where you expect improvement, and where you're worried that maybe there even could be some decline based on numbers, based on injuries, whatever the case may be. Our question of the day today has already elicited a number of off-the-board responses, by
the way.
There's
a shock.
Yes.
Can you follow the rules, people?
Follow the rules of the question, or don't.
Without rules, there's anarchy.
The hosts here. The question of the day is this, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Which Jet poses the biggest problem for the Jaguars this weekend? And this is assuming they all play. Brandon Marshall did not practice yesterday, but has not been ruled out. He's questionable at the time being, and the official injury report won't be out until tomorrow. But Chris Ivory, the running back, Brandon Marshall, wide receiver, or Darrell Revis, the cornerback, who you would assume is going to match up with Allen Robinson this week.
Yeah, that's what the Jaguars are interested in seeing. As Greg Olsen said, you're going to find out pretty quickly.
Right.
You know, against the Patriots, Revis did follow
Edelman.
And then they had safety help with the other guys. And he was even matched up against Gronk.
But Amendola killed him in that game.
Yeah, and Revis was even matched up against Gronkowski a couple of times. So I think you're going to see him against Julius, depending on how they line up, if they decide to play sides. But I think each of the Jaguars receivers is going to go against him at some point. And if I'm the Jags, I do exactly what the Raiders did. Go after him.
See, yeah.
Don't because he's out there, don't cut the field in half.
Well, Logman said he covered Amari Cooper the vast majority of the time, and the Jets or the Raiders did take a couple of shots, but for the most part Amari Cooper didn't have a huge game, but that's okay if the rest of your guys pick it up. And again, this is what the way I look at it, Ryan. We have to stop saying, oh, this team is good on this, good on that. It's time for the Jags to be good at some things, too. When you look at Oakland with a second-year quarterback just like Jacksonville, for Derek Carr to go out there and throw four touchdowns, I don't think anybody really expected that. And I get the West Coast hangover. There is something to that to some degree. But when Latavius Murray ran it very well against them. And I think they can't just go in there, I don't think, and say Blake's got to throw it 50-something times.
Well, I think the Jets had a Patriots hangover.
They may have.
And I think they're coming back from the West Coast ready to punch somebody in the mouth because basically their players on defense and their coach didn't deny it. They were loafing on defense against Oakland. They missed like 19.
Mohammed Wilkerson called it exactly that way.
Yeah, David Harris, same thing. So you're going to see the Jets circle the wagons this week. Because they have to be worried about themselves, you know, in terms of getting back to getting to 5-3. If you're the Jaguars, you know, this is the kind of game that you've never won since this regime has been here.
Right.
go win it.
Go win it. Right. Go out there and win it this weekend against the New York Jets. The Jags have not necessarily because of this game, but overall, in terms of winning percentage, the easiest record of any team in the National Football League for the remaining opponents this year. So there are literally no excuses to be made here.
Yeah, I mean, Hayes Carlion did a good story in today's paper ranking the rest of the games.
Right, I saw that.
I mean, we were going over the list yesterday, and it helped, you know, looking at his numbers. I was like, Atlanta, who knows what they're going to be like when they get
right
here. San Diego, they could be totally done. They may be done already. So, but you got to start by winning the next one.
Well, you've lost, your opponents have lost. You know, potentially they thought they might lose their quarterback this week with the Jets, but they say Ryan Fitzpatrick had already been announced he'll start. So, it's an issue with the thumb on the left hand. It could become a ball security issue at some point in the football game, but it's certainly not the downgrade that if you're a Jag fan, you're probably hoping for with Geno Smith coming in there. But so he's banged up. Marshall's banged up. We don't know if he's going to play yet, which would be significant. And you got
Mangold didn't play last game.
Right. But then you go beyond that. Steve Smith out for the year for Baltimore. Keenan Allen out for the year for San Diego. These teams are getting progressively more and more beat up. Kendall Wright right now dealing with an MCL injury for the Tennessee Titans, their top receiver. Those are your next five opponents all dealing with significant skill position guys that may or not be available or certainly not likely to be 100% when they play them. Take advantage.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I asked about yesterday is take advantage early. I mean, this team is one touchdown in the opening drive this year and six punts. With that environment up there, if you get the ball first and score first, you're going to start hearing whispers
in
the crowd.
They can turn on them quick.
Yeah, they could. And the stadium's not going to be full anyways. It never is. So, I mean, I think there's you know, can they carry over the momentum of the second quarter of the Buffalo game? Can the defense keep creating takeaways? Can they? I think they should. I think they are going to stay creative on defense to create more pressure.
They have to, don't they?
Because they can't do it with a four-man rush. Thankfully, they've acknowledged that, and now you have to try and design ways to either send a safety or a corner, get the linebackers more involved, and then now create the takeaways.
Is there such a thing as carrying over momentum, though, even week to week? I mean, over a bye week, it feels good. I think you have a better mindset coming off a win than you do a loss, and it probably felt good to have that with the time off. But other than that, I mean, every opponent's a new opponent, and you know, you're up and down. You had momentum, then you gave the momentum away. Yeah. The other team had it, and then you ended up on the upswing. I don't know if that carries over or not.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, I think it's more just like your psyche. It has no bearing on what plays you're going to run and, you know, what plays the Jets are going to run. But, I mean, I asked Gus 5 minutes after that Buffalo game, is there a sigh of relief? He goes, no. I said, why not? Because there should have been.
Right.
Because you didn't want, you know, that would have been an all-timer. But
might have been the all-timer.
The all-timer.
Yeah, might have been the all-timer.
So the fact that you rallied to win the game, you should at least get some confidence out of that.
All right. Well, you can answer that question today with Brandon Marshall, Chris Ivory, Darrell Revis. Which one of those poses the biggest threat to the Jets this week, assuming they all play? If you want to go off the board, you can. We have the right to ignore your answer or perhaps focus on your answer. There's
people,
some interesting ones.
Don't get cute. Don't say Joe Namath or, you know, Richard Todd.
He's starting early today. He's putting it out there, laying down the law. Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union. Now, this is probably the most important question you'll be asked this week. Donna Murphy sends these emails out every day as to, you know, different things happening in historically in the world of sports and, you know, different every day is something. Today is National Something Day, right? It's always something. Right?
Is it National Sandwich Day?
Today's National Donut Day.
Ooh, like that.
Think about it. Think about this. I need your top three donuts later on in the program. All-timer.
I'll give you that in 5 seconds.
All right. Well, you pretend that there's some thought that needs to go into this, and we'll discuss at a later point in the program today. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up as he met with the media midweek. First opportunity to talk about the New York Jets. We will hear from Blake Bortles coming up as well a little bit later on. And are we going to go? I don't know. We may be going up to New York as well and check in with one of the Jets reporters up there. Actually, we're going to do that tomorrow, I think. But we'll open up the phone lines to you if you want to get in today at 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. If you are so inclined to fire off a text to us, you can tweet us at MD underscore 1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL. Fat Tony. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Which jet poses the biggest threat to the Jags' chances for victory this week? Chris Ivory, Brandon Marshall, Darrell Rivas. Share your thoughts with that on, share your thoughts with us on that. And, any Jaguar related thoughts, bring it to the table here as well. It's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much. It really doesn't. Why don't you get your headset ready, because we will be taking calls this segment over there. You can hear it through the headset. I don't know if you'd hear the callers, Ryan O'Halloran, through the headset. Have you done your math? That looks like some, that looks beyond long division to me from this angle. There are no sines or cosines in there, right?
I tell you what, I took geometry twice in high school.
Did you?
I
flunked you enjoyed it, it that much?
Yeah, I got a C the second time. People, they would be proud of the math I'm doing, but my total, I'm sure, is I have Blake Bortles being blitzed on 32% of his dropbacks this year.
Okay, we're talking about that. Tyler sent us some info from ESPN Stats and Info on how well Blake has played against the blitz here. So you have him blitzed. Go again with the percentage of time he's been blitzed.
318 dropbacks, 101 pressures. So it turns out, which division out the 31.7%.
Pressures or blitzes?
More than four pass rushers.
Okay, that's what we're trying to define here, whether or not they get pressure or not. So how does that compare to last year in terms of the amount of time?
I don't have that number in front of me. I'm guessing it's probably a little lower because there were some real outliers last year of over 50%, but that's just guessing.
Do you have numbers? Like what they've got is completion percentage versus the blitz. They've got TD to interception ratio versus the blitz, and they've got yards per attempt, and of course total QBR, which is a proprietary stat for them, which you wouldn't be able to calculate your own total QBR. By the way, his total QBR according to ESPN Stats and Info against the blitz, Blake Bortles, has gone from 13.8, which was worst among all qualifying quarterbacks last year, to 69.8. Pretty damn good. I don't know if it's, you
which
know,
is higher than his QBR is.
Is it his six, overall QBR?
Is it six touchdowns and two picks?
It is seven and two. Okay. Is what they've got. 7-2 this year. 2-6 last year. Two touchdowns, six interceptions versus the blitz last year, which was the worst ratio in the National Football League. Now 7-2 is what they have against the blitz, and his yards per attempt has climbed from 4.5 to 6.7. 4.5 also worst in the league last year.
Yeah,
that's pretty good improvement across the board.
Against Indianapolis, they blitzed him 46% of the time. He was 14 of 22 with 206 yards against more than four rushers.
Pretty good.
So then he had one touchdown against Houston, two touchdowns against Miami, including the 46-yarder. So his pick sixes are coming against regular defense.
Right.
That's the problem.
It's right, which you hope makes them more correctable, right? Because it seems more like a decision-making process than anything else.
And that's one thing, and Greg Olson brought it up yesterday before I asked about it, was you look at the completion percentage, 55.7, that's I think 31st out of 32 quarterbacks who are more than 100 passes. And okay, why is that happening? Are they they're taking more deep shots? Okay, that would skew the numbers by one or two percentages. You know, are there too many, missed throws, miscommunications? I mean, the throwaways are good. He's not throwing away for no reason. Every time he's doing it, it looks like he's doing it for good reason. So I think, is from the Jaguars' perspective, if you look at that and you want to get that up, how do you get it up? How you get that percentage near 60, which is around the league average. So that's one of the things that Greg Olson talked about in terms of what on offense they want to improve after the bye.
All right, let's get some calls in here to get going this morning on Jaguars Today. 641-1010 is the phone number if you'd like to talk. Any aspect of Jaguar football, you're welcome to bring it to the table. And, of course, if you want to answer the question of the day, you're welcome to do that as well, which is simply which jet poses the biggest threat to the Jags' chances of success this week. Chris Ivory, Brandon Marshall, Darrell Rivas. We will start with Adam on the south side talking Jags here on Jaguars Today. Hi, Adam. How are you?
Hey, good, Mike. What's going on, man?
What's up, man?
Listen, first of all, let's start off, man. It's almost the halfway through the season, and the Jags are in contention, baby. You know?
They are that. They are that.
But the big thing, man,
it is funny, isn't it?
It's hilarious. I mean,
but it's true. You know what? I mean, look. Would it be something to, you know, brag about necessarily if you go 6-10, 7-9 and win the division? Maybe not, but it beats the alternative, doesn't it, Adam?
Mike, if they win the division and go 6-10 or 7-9, I will brag to everyone that I know.
Right, who cares, right? You're the best in the South if that's the case.
Absolutely. With what we've been through, I would take that in a heartbeat, man. But the big thing for me, this weekend's a big game, because if they really are going to contend, they're going to have to win one of these games that they shouldn't win, whether it's this weekend or the Baltimore game, you know, or even San Diego, I guess. But, you know, this is a pretty good opportunity for them, I think. You know, carrying over momentum might not be something that actually takes place, but they have to feel better, you know, coming off of it. And at least they have the bye. And if they can get a little momentum, you know, and they win this game, then they really do have a shot. And, hey, man, halfway through, it feels good. I'll take it.
All right. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it. Look, 3-5 beats the alternative, right? And you got to figure Indy taking on Denver this weekend, not a favorable matchup. Houston's off, so they're not going anywhere. 3-5, you could be right there, tied or at the lead in the division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's all you want to do, get going as you near Thanksgiving, is are you giving yourself a shot? The Jaguars haven't really given themselves a shot, but the shot has been given to them.
Right.
So
now you got to take advantage of it.
Now, who cares how you got it? Win a game on the road. And like the caller said, win one that you're not expected to win, because I think where you do build momentum and confidence is by winning that type of game. Because let's say they do find a way to win on Sunday. I do think that can carry over to play a Baltimore team that is pretty much reeling.
You guys feel like the offense is better this year, right? That's the side of the football. I mean, almost ask this redundantly, right? The offense is better, much improved.
But the numbers aren't going to reflect that.
They're not, right? And I'm looking at the total points, and I realize some teams have played 8 games and some teams have played 7. But most teams, I think, have still played 7. A lot of the byes already taken care of. The Jags have scored 147 points. I was going to compare them when Adam said, you know, games that – they're not expected to win, like Baltimore and San Diego. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Baltimore's 2-6. San Diego's 2-6. The Jags are 2-5. Why should they be any less expected to win those games? And I get it. I get the big picture. I get the success that Phillip Rivers has had against his team and the different factors that go into it. So I just wanted to look and see how they compared statistically with some of those teams. And Baltimore's actually allowed more points than the Jags, not significantly more, 214 to 207, keeping in mind that some of those Jags points allowed were pick sixes, obviously, but whatever the case. But the Jags have scored 147 points through 7 games, which is up significantly for them, just over 21 points a game. But Baltimore has gone out and scored 190, and they've given up their 214 in one more game than Jacksonville. It's still, even though the records are similar, statistically, they're not necessarily on par with some of these teams with similar or even worse records than them.
Yeah, it feels different. Yeah, they got offense. They just seem like they're more explosive. I mean, last year through 7 games, they only had 32 explosive plays. This year they have 48 through 7 games. So they're making more big plays, which is a 16-yard pass or a 12-yard run. That's a positive. Now, can they, you know, they've ironed out their red zone stuff. For the most part, they still have to tighten up some of that goal line stuff, obviously. But if I'm a Jaguar fan going into this last 9 games, I'm much more worried about the defense than the offense.
And granted, I'm with you on that. I think Tony is as well. And you can only play the Jets game this week. But again, these other teams, while they may have been better up to this point, they're getting worse. Because you can't take Steve Smith and Keenan Allen out of those two teams' attacks, whereas the Jags are basically adding Julius Thomas, or have been adding him and figuring out how to get him on the same page with Blake Bortles. T.J. Yeldon, his 2 100-yard games out of his last 3 contests, the outside Allen wide receivers have been doing a terrific job all year.
And I think I think Rashad Green's going to be a big addition. A
couple more weeks till he gets back.
Yeah, 2 weeks from tonight he'll be eligible to come back, and by all accounts he'll be playing and returning punts. Special teams got to start making some plays. they got to start creating some short fields. I think Green will help that on punt returns. I think Green will help things by lineup in the slot. Let's face it, you can't count on Marquise Lee at all this year until he proves that you can count on him. So
I don't think anyone's counting on him, but at the same token, I understand why they haven't put him on IR. People are like, hey, put him on IR. Well, if you're not in a numbers crunch on game day in terms of having healthy bodies, why not? Even if you only get three or four games out of him, it will help his development, you would think, for next year.
And that's a point that I made to a couple questions on Twitter last night was they're in a better position now to stash him on the roster because they're not as banged up as they were earlier in the year.
Right.
And at this point, the only reason you'd put him on IR is if you're unhappy with him. They're obviously not at that point yet. They feel he's falling in line and doing the right things rehab-wise.
Right, he's trying to do what he can do. His body is not cooperating at this point.
I just think, okay, he did 100 wind sprints on the sideline in New England that day. Did he make it worse? When he came, you know, he came out of the game, but all he did that whole game was run up and down the sidelines.
Right.
And it's like, okay, did that complete the injury? But
do you think it did? I mean, is that a...
Who knows? I mean, he was running pretty fast there, so that's probably adrenaline kicking in. But it's, you know, they're not being secretive. They're just saying he's not ready.
Right.
So,
all right, let's go to Bo in Arlington next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Bo. How are you? Hello, Bo. All right, no Bo in Arlington, I guess. The story Tyler directed me to on
where's Bo
on ESPN. I don't know. He's in Arlington, or at least he was. But he's not on Jaguars Today. It's entitled "Few Have Noticed, But Blake Bortles Is Much Better." You can check that out on ESPN's coverage, ESPN.com, NFL Nation coverage. I'm sure Mike DiRocco, Kevin Seifert put this together for NFL Nation. And he talks about how Derek Carr is kind of the darling of the football folks right now, and Teddy Bridgewater has helped his team win 5 of his first 7, and all these other guys getting the attention, but maybe Bortles needs to be getting a little bit more of that himself. Let's go back to a comment you made a moment ago about short yardage.
Blake Bortles would have been even better this year if he had Amari Cooper, but that's beside the point. That was my pick for them for third overall, but go ahead.
How much better, though? We talked about this yesterday, because if Amari Cooper's on this team, you're not getting near the same level of production out of Allen Hurns. He's not playing as much, right? I mean, Allen Hurns' numbers compared to Amari Cooper's numbers this year are very comparable. You know, I mean, I think Amari Cooper's a better player, but based on what Hurns has been able to do, how much better could this pass offense be?
I think it could be even more explosive than it's showing signs of, because I think you saw it last week when Revis followed Cooper around. We don't know if that's an automatic this week with Allen Robinson. I think Allen Robinson's numbers would be even better if Amari Cooper's not. I think Allen Hurns would still be productive, not on pace for 1,000 yards, but I think you would have had three stellar options.
But you also see, we don't know what would have happened had Fowler stayed healthy. We know that the pass rush is the biggest glaring hole on this team right now, right? So, I mean, you know.
Ifs and buts and candy and nuts, you know, but
right.
It's like.
Amari Cooper could have come here and torn his ACL in practice. You don't know.
He wouldn't have.
Well, yeah, right. He would have broken his ankle. You just don't know. You're talking about short yardage a moment ago. And just obviously a reference to giving the ball to Toby Gerhardt 4 times at the 1-yard line. How does that change going forward? Does TJ Yeldon get first crack? Does Gerhardt get a shot to get it in? If he doesn't, do they look somewhere else? Does Bernard Pierce get in the mix?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I think a good thing for the Jaguars is they do have some options there. Let's say they're first and goal from the 1 and Gus tells Greg Olsen, you got 4 shots again. Okay. I'd still give it to Gerhardt first time up because he's your short yardage guy. I put Tyson at fullback, see if you can, you know, right the wrongs of 2 weeks ago. If you don't get in, okay, then I try and spread him out a little bit, put the Allens outside to see if there's a crease there for TJ with 2 less defenders in the box. Or put Julius Thomas on. One of the reasons you got him, red zone, end zone. See if you can get a matchup with him. Maybe put Mercedes on the other side, see if you can create 2 one-on-one matchups where you can throw 2 jump balls based on what the safety does. So I think Yeldon should be in the game. I don't think you totally discount Gerhardt. You just discount him from getting 4 shots.
Yeah, maybe give him a crack at it.
Yeah, and like
what if you do and Toby's ineffective. What if he gets a few more cracks this week and he's ineffective? What is Toby Gerhart's role on this football team at that point?
I mean,
does he have one?
He has a special teams role, but you know, as they were quick to point out, is he did convert a couple of short yardage things in the middle of the field, which is fine. Okay, then he's still there. But when you get close to the end zone, if I'm a play caller, I want the ball in my best player's hands, and that's T.J. Yeldon, Blake Bortles, the Allens, Julius Thomas. So I maybe try and throw one. I give Yeldon. If you want to give Gerhart the first crack at first down and you don't make it, then I go Yeldon, and then you got to think about passing.
You know what, though? I don't have a problem. When you say you want the ball in your best player's hands, I think TJ's a better player. I don't have an issue if you have a short yardage specialist. I mean, Barry Sanders had one, for goodness sakes. Fred Taylor got vultured at the goal line, you know, for the first half of his career, certainly. And those players that came in were quite often very effective in that role because of the style of runner that you had. If TJ Yeldon is a guy that, you know, relies on quick feet and cutting, is that as effective as having a bulldozer at the goal line? It may be, it may not be. But
I grant you that point. That's why you say you give Toby first crack.
Right.
Because if they're in the exact same situation this week and he doesn't make it on first down and he's lined up at second down, you're like, okay, at what point are they just banging their head against the concrete wall? You have to show that you can adjust after that debacle against Buffalo.
All right, let's go to Leo in Mandarin next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Leo.
Hey, Mike, thanks for letting me in. But, hey, I want to answer the question a little bit. Brandon Marshall, if he plays, and I hate to not know a guy's name and be disrespectful, the guy from Houston who had that big day against Jacksonville with the, you know, when Devon House was, yeah, they can't let that happen again. And Brandon Marshall is a much better wide receiver. You either change up the defense or what. I don't know if y'all know this about fantasy football. I don't know if I'm allowed to give away a massive secret. Everybody who plays Jacksonville, if you look at their numbers from the guy, it seems like they all have top guys. If you look at every week, when even E.J. Manuel had a real good game in the loss last week against Jacksonville. So the guys are going to put the numbers up. But I do believe, and I'm going to tell you, even if Revis also too, even if they take Robinson away, I'm going to tell you a sleeper guy this week. I'm going to give another secret out. I really like Walters. I've been saying it for a long time. He's real reliable. Don't be surprised if that guy has a big game this week. And
all right, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Leo. Appreciate the call. First of all, if you don't know who DeAndre Hopkins is, it's very difficult for me to take your opinion that Brandon Marshall is much better than DeAndre Hopkins very seriously, because you apparently don't know how good DeAndre Hopkins is, if that's the case. I would argue at this point DeAndre Hopkins is a better player than Brandon Marshall. Not necessarily by a significant margin. Brandon Marshall's been having a terrific year. He's had a better career at this point, but Hopkins is a lot younger. The overall point, however, I think Brandon Marshall is a significant threat to his football team. It's been a revolving door at cornerback opposite Aaron Colvin for a lot of this year, Ryan, and to not great effect. And that, you know, you did have a guy like E.J. Manuel throwing to Robert Woods and Chris Hogan, not even his top guys, in a comeback effort, make some big plays easily with the touchdown for the first time in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I would go back to house. I asked about Demetrius McCray yesterday, why he hasn't been able to get on the field, sort of got a non-answer. So is he back in the mix? They say he's competing with Grotz and House for that starting spot on Sunday. This is the only secondary in pro football that have an interception this year. All three are by the linebackers. Why is that happening? Why aren't they getting more deflections? Well, the pass rush is in there. Okay, but they're still getting pass breakups, just not interceptions. I think that's a key for this defense the last 2 months of the year. Got to get some picks.
All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles coming up and get a few more of your calls in as well. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah, it's his second year. He's improving. See, he's more poised, he's more relaxed in the pocket. And I'll tell you one thing, his arm is he probably got one of the strongest arms in the league. He scrambles a lot, and he can throw, even scrambling. So you can tell he can make all the throws. And, you know, their passing attack is very vertical. And I think it's because of his arm. He can throw all the throws.
That's Darrell Revis on NYJets.com talking about Blake Bortles at a weekly press conference for him. And you certainly don't hear that criticism anymore, Tony, about check down, check down, check down. Why don't they throw the ball down the field. At least I don't hear that. The Jags do have a very vertical offense. They've taken their shots right from the opening week of the season.
No, they do, and it's something we discussed briefly yesterday because we mentioned that Blake Bortles' completion percentage has actually gone down this year compared to last year, and I think it's because he's so downfield-minded. And he's taking chances with the ball downfield, trying to give his guys a chance to go up and make plays, which is nice to see. I would like to see him every now and then, instead of doing that, take the check down and get the 5 or 6 yards, especially on early downs, and put pressure on the defense to come up and make a play on a guy like TJ Yeldon in open space, as opposed to forcing the ball downfield. And I'd love to see what his numbers look like if he was completing, you know, 62-63% of his passes, just what that would look like for him.
Right. Is that a concern for you, Ryan, the completion percentage in the mid-50s right now for Blake Bortles?
I'm a little concerned. And that was even before Greg Olsen mentioned it without being asked about it.
Right.
So that's obviously something they've talked about. Drops aren't a problem.
Early in the season they had a few, but it hasn't
tailed off.
I think most teams, if you looked around, would probably have similar issues.
Yeah, I mean, like they're at 15 drops through 7 games, like you said, front loaded. So, my thing is, I mentioned that earlier, is, okay, if they want to get that completion percentage up, are they going to take some of the deep shots away? Okay, well then, what does that do? So, when you have a 2-to-1 touchdown ratio or interception, you're doing some things good, but it's, do they feel like they need to work the underneath a little bit better, get some other guys involved?
All right.
More high percentage passes.
Yeah. So far, that completion percentage, not in stellar territory right now. And you'd like to see, I think the yards per attempt has gone up nicely. I'd like to see it get up even a little bit higher than it is right now, because there's just a lot of, dead space in there. The final numbers look good, but they should look good in today's NFL when you throw it over 50 times or right around that mark.
Yeah. Sidetrack,
a
little bit of news here about the stadium. Other news outlets have this since on Jacksonville.com. Mayor Lenny Curry wants to move forward with an ambitious makeover at Everbank Field that includes an amphitheater next to the stadium, calls for taxpayers to cover half the $90 million cost. It would take out the amphitheater, 4,000 to 5,000 fixed-seat venue. It would be owned and operated by Shad Khan, 30-year lease. This project also includes the luxury seating area, which they take out seats, as we've always known, and also the indoor practice facility next to the stadium. So divide 90 minus 45, that means Shad be on the hook for $45 million, which is what he said. It would be well north of 30. So there's some traction here in that proposal to the city council last night.
Maybe you can bring some clarity to this. We saw the big...
I read that fast.
That's okay. No, I mean, I think we got the gist of what you just said. Where, in your mind, where do you envision this amphitheater being?
They said next to the stadium. So,
right. So I think about the old practice fields on the, what would that be, the south end of the stadium?
I think it would be part of a grand project that includes the practice facility. So that whole area, because remember Shad was saying that it's not just going to be the indoor practice facility. It's going to be other stuff. So I think, can they have everything on that side of the stadium?
But this, remember, when the first plans were laid out this summer, and, the vision of the multi-tiered practice facility and all that, and it's in the shipyard area, is this abandoning the idea to develop the shipyard area in lieu of having one right there adjacent to the stadium?
I don't think you need one over at the shipyards now.
Obviously.
And Shad said this 2 weeks ago, is this is the priority now. Basically, because he didn't get what he wanted. I mean, basically, he gave them a proposal for the shipyards that dropped jaws, and the city drugged their feet because they had a change in office. That's my, he moved on to this one because he feels, from a competitive standpoint for his team, they need to get the indoor facility up quickly.
All right, there you have it. Some of the latest there from Ryan O'Howard and the Florida Times Union. Let's get some calls in here, and we will get to Gus and Blake coming up in due time before the show is out today, as they both spoke in their typical midweek press conferences yesterday. Let's go to Jim, who's got a question for you, Ryan O'Halloran. And Jim, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, please.
Morning, guys. All you have to know is how good DeAndre Hopkins is. He makes Brian Hoyer look like a decent quarterback.
There you
That's
go.
That's all you have to know.
You remembered his name.
How about that?
But the other thing I was going to tell you is, Ryan, I love your columns and everything else because you kind of bring a level head to everything. But you do bring out the crazies, because I saw the comments after your column about malarkey the other day, and somebody said the Jags obviously missed on quarterback because Blaine Gabbert's now starting for San Francisco. And I'm like, really? Did anybody ever watch the Blaine Gabbert years here? It's just amazing.
Was this underneath a story?
Yeah, it was underneath.
Okay, well, then I didn't see it.
Saying, don't read it. It's not worth your time. But the other question I was going to ask you guys, it seems to me that the Jags offense, I know statistically is better, but not significantly better, but it seems to me as watching the games and being at the games, we have fewer three and outs than we did last year, and I don't have access to all the stats you guys do. Is it just my imagination, or is it truly better than what it was last year?
I can't compare the 2 years. They've still had way too many three and outs this year, I feel, but
you can't compare. You don't have the numbers at your fingertips, yeah. Right? Is what you're saying with three and outs.
To me, it feels kind of like the pass rush last year, right? Where there are times in games where they find it's streaky with this offense right now, and then they'll go through specifically second halves of these football games where it's three and out, three and out, three and out, and they're not putting up any points. And I don't feel like they did a ton of that last year. I felt like this was a team that got the ball at their own 25 a lot and got to the opponent's 40 a ton and then just couldn't do anything past that point. But they are scoring more this year than they were last year.
Yeah, they're up about 6 points a game.
Right.
5.5, 6 points a game, whatever it is.
23 drives this year of 3 plays and punt, which is like over 3 a game. It piqued my interest. I'm going to look that up later. But
well, yeah, we'll see if we can get some comparable data from last year. But overall, look, the bottom lines are scoring more points, right? I mean, in that
going the Bortles era, by the way, I don't want to see the Henny numbers.
You want to control the clock. You want to be able to keep the other team off the field as well. But score quick, score slow. If you're scoring more, that's the number one thing you can do as an offense.
No doubt.
Not? So in that standpoint, they're significantly better than they were last year. And is there great room for improvement? Absolutely. They're not a finished product. They're not where they need to be. But and we don't want to sit here and get in this trap, because I bring this up all the time. Let's not just compare this Jags team to the last couple of lackluster Jags teams. That's not a good enough standard to be better than. You should be better than that standard. But they are, in that area, significantly improved. We'll do some research on that one as we get Bill up at the beaches up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
My overall comment is really stems from the guys in the afternoon. I think they just paint a rosy picture. I got to tell you what, the way Manuel played last week, as far as I'm concerned, I've been watching football for 45 years at a high level. He made Blaine Gabbert look like Tom Brady. That's how bad he was, right? But secondly, when it comes to the Jags, and you guys can probably do some research. In recent memory, Mike, I don't remember after 8 games any first place team in any division being 3-5. Okay? So
it is the first time.
Yeah, I guess where I'm going with this is I just want to see if the Jags can get to 7-9 and win the division, great. Even if they're 5-11 and win division, it's great for the fans. But I always focus on where the team is, right? This is the NFL. This isn't high school or college in a rah-rah. I mean, yeah, the fans, it's great. But, you know, in the afternoon, they're jockeying, saying, well, you know, Indy's playing here, and then they got to go here, and this team's going here, and they got to go here. Well, we got to win our game, because when I look back last Sunday, 2 weeks ago, I was shocked at what happened in the second half. I didn't think there was a prayer of Buffalo coming back. And, Mike, what would have happened if that phantom pass interference wasn't called on third down, and the Jags didn't make a first down on fourth down, and a win's a win. I get it. But what happens if now we're sitting at 1-6 instead of 2-5? Would the narrative be changing? Because we were so close to being 1-6 with a phantom call, and I just want to see them become a team that, you know, you get to 7-9, good for you. You know, Carolina made it last year at 7-9. But I don't want to hear the rah-rah at 5-11, and if we win the division, because the division is just terrible, that, hey, look at what we're doing. I'll take your comments off the air.
All right, first of all, if you got an issue with the afternoon show, why don't you call them? Honestly, I don't know what they say about the team, and all I can deal with is what we say about the team. Look, what's the alternative? be 5-11 and be four games out of the lead in the division? I mean, look, is it preferable to be 5-11 compared to 10-6? Of course not. But that's where they are right now. Whatever, if they can stay in contention, I don't care what the record is this year if they can win the division. Now, it doesn't mean there's not an underlying bunch of things that need fixing, right? Yeah, that they need to be better.
This is a flawed team.
Of course it is. And I don't understand look, that's what we're going to do. We're going to sit here. Should we go, oh, they're 2-5 and let's just.
They don't deserve
the division. Let's just bash them every day. No, they're 2-5 and they just so happen to be a half game out of the division. The division is historically bad. As you said, no 3-5 team has ever led a division at that late point of a season. So, yes, it's historically bad. So what? It's where they find themselves right now. All they can do, we can't fix the five losses. You can't do anything about them. They're done. Yes, they have to go out and win their games. They got to beat the Jets or teams like that, or they're going to squander this opportunity. But the opportunity exists, and we're going to talk about it.
Well, there's two reasons why we talk about this. One is because it's the facts, and other because it's hysterical that they're in this spot with only two wins. Now you go forward and say, okay, what are the chances in history of this league a team was 2-5 and everything was still in front of them?
Right. Not very often. I mean, look, the Seattle Seahawks went 7-9, and I know a lot of people on the station have brought that up. I've heard it discussed. We are well aware of it. When they started this playoff run, they snuck in as a 7-9 division winner, and what do? They knocked off the defending Super Bowl champion New Orleans Saints in that playoff game. You had the Beastquake run by Marshawn Lynch, and it put Seattle's team on the map, and they rolled that into a deep run in the playoffs the following year, and then back-to-back Super Bowl appearances. I'm not saying the Jags are going to do that, but sometimes big things start with humble beginnings. Right now, any Jaguar fan that wouldn't be happy about winning the division, no matter what the record is, I don't know what would make you happy. Yeah, we'd all rather be 16-0. But they're not going to be 16-0, and they're not going to be 11-5 for that.
Hey!
Okay, yes, I'm calling it now, Ryan. They will not close the season on a 10-game winning streak. So, but you know, look, again, the bottom line though, if you're upset with something somebody says in the afternoon, call them. They're big boys. Tell them. Don't tell me. I have nothing to do with what they say, and we'll continue to have nothing to do with what they say. That's their opinions, and they're going to express them.
Dirt. Don't call me.
Now that guy might comment on. All right. Coming up next, this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. We'll hear from Blake Bortles and Gus Bradley.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. This date, November 5th, 1995, the Carolina Panthers won an expansion team record fourth game in a row, defeating the San Francisco 49ers 13-7 at 3Com Park. The first time that was in league history that an expansion team was able to defeat the defending world champion. Imagine not too many expansion teams, probably at least in the modern era, have played against Super Bowl champions, so it's probably a low threshold, but nevertheless, so that was the first time it happened. Famous birthdays for this date. Let's go back to 1891, Ryan O'Halloran, and let's say happy birthday or
Alexander Hamilton.
Long ago birthday to Earl Greasy Neal, a former NFL head coach with the Philadelphia Eagles who led him to two NFL championships in the 40s.
I recognize Greasy Neal because he has, in common with Gus Bradley, he had a horrid winning percentage through 2 years, but the Eagles stuck with him, I think because he had a part ownership of the team. They turned the program around.
Two championships towards the end of his tenure, yes, in Philadelphia. 1957, Kellen Winslow Sr. was born on this date, and a five-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1995. And 1992 saw Odell Beckham Jr. come into the world, making his parents a proud group. Odell Beckham Jr. turns 23 years young today. This state football brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. 287-7756 is the number. Re-roofs, repairs for your home, for your business. If you've got roofing concerns, call Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. 287-7756. License number CCC056797. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo isn't eligible to return until November 22nd for the boys, but he was a limited participant in practice yesterday for the first time since he broke his collarbone. He is expected to start practicing and participating in team drills next week, but for now at least, stole all the first team reps, of course, going to Matt Cassel as they get ready for this week's game. Week 9 of the NFL season gets underway tonight with Cleveland at Cincinnati. The Bengals come into the game 7-0, but have to face their toughest gauntlet of the season tonight. No, it's not the Cleveland Browns. It's a primetime TV audience, which Cincinnati has shrunk in several times in the past several years, including in the playoffs. Andy Dalton hasn't found a way to get over the top in those. Every time it seems like they've been put on Thursday Night Football, he throws for about 80 yards and four touchdowns as well. So we'll see if Dalton and that Bengals offense can stand up under the bright lights of everybody's attention being on them tonight.
All right, there you have it.
Looking forward to seeing Johnny tonight.
I'm interested to see what he does tonight.
Yeah.
Tony, does this change your prediction of the Cincinnati Bengals folding in primetime now that Manziel is the quarterback?
No, I think Cleveland's going to beat them. I think Cleveland's going to beat them tonight because Cincinnati just hasn't gotten over this.
That's a hot take.
It is a hot take. Cincinnati cannot win the primetime games. Sizzling. Don't burn your fingers.
Bold prediction.
I think the Bengals will find a way to get this one done at home tonight. Opposite viewpoints on the last call we took. We'll get to those on the text line here in a moment. Big Cat Country tweeting at us. The overall Jaguar 3-and-out percentages last year. This is not broken out to take Chad Henne's performance or lack thereof out of the equation.
16 games minus 7 or versus 7, right? Because last year's stat is based on all 16 games.
I believe so, yeah, yes. Yeah. 193 drives. Last year they went 3-and-out 25.9%, a quarter of the time they went 3-and-out. And in 2015, in 80 drives, not quite halfway there, but after another game, they'll be right about at that mark, they've gone 3-and-out 28.7% of the time. So actually an uptick in 3-and-outs.
Yeah, I think that higher percentage because they had a lead against Miami. I think they went 3-and-out a couple of times. 3-and-outs against Buffalo after they had a lead. And then also, they're getting less garbage time. You know, they didn't go 3-and-out during those garbage time drives last year. So, I mean, they're obviously getting more big plays and some more points. But we talked about that scoring average up 6 points. I did a little historical thing before the season, and about 6 to 7 points, if they're able to do that, would be considered above average compared to teams that are as bad as they were last year. You know, going from teens to 20s. I mean, there's one or two teams that went up by 12 or 13 points, but they're right in that little sweet spot there of how much they should improve.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a look at the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line here as a couple people – commenting on our last caller, Bill was talking about the performance of the team, and I guess versus expectations or how people are, I don't know what exactly, how people are spinning it, maybe, I think he felt. But
rosy picture.
He said, this one coming in from the 904 area code, I think the caller's point was, how are we to have confidence in guys who picked most of every player on that defense, horribly failed in the 2013 draft, let multiple good players go, i.e. Brandon Marshall, JT Thomas, Daryl Smith, all while having the lowest payroll in the league, GM and coaching both in question, owner commitment to winning without spending in question, weak AFC South and progress comparisons to one of the weakest seasons in history from 2014, distracting from poor progress, now not expected to beat other two-win teams with more of their best players hurt, almost had historical collapse on a national stage last week. My point to all that is, I'm not sitting here telling you have to have confidence in anything.
Yeah.
Don't have confidence in anything you want to have confidence in.
We're not predicting what's going to happen. We're telling you what position they're in now.
Here's the position they're in. Here's the opportunity out in front of them. They're the ones who have to make that happen. Am I going to predict that they make the playoffs? Hell no. They've let too many of these opportunities go by the wayside. But am I to sit here and tell you that they can't make the playoffs because they've previously let opportunities slide by? Well, that's sports, isn't it? Isn't that why we play? I mean, the Jags have been in some close games. Have they blown some? Absolutely. Have they lost some they should have won? Absolutely. absolutely. That means I think they should have won some of those games. That means maybe they'll be in position to do that again, and maybe this time it'll go their way, or they'll make the plays to make it go their way. No one's sitting here telling you, you don't have to have confidence in anybody. You want to fire Gus? Fire Gus in your mind. You want to get Rashad Khan out of town? Run him out of town. It doesn't really matter. We sit here, that's not our job. Our job is not to convince you to feel a certain way about the football team. At least I don't think that's ever been my job on this radio station or anywhere else for that matter.
How do you really feel?
That was as matter of factly as I could say it.
I mean, where I always disagree with an email or a reader, caller, whatever. Well, they should be 1-6. Well, they could very easily be 0-7, but they could very easily be 4-3.
Absolutely.
We could have that conversation.
Right.
For
should be this. Well, should Jason Myers have made a field goal?
Yeah.
Right? And then you beat Indy. I mean, yes, you can trade those around all day long. The fact is they're 2-5. And the fact is they're 2-5 in, yes, a historically weak division, which we pointed out. No one's saying, wow, this is a great Jaguar team, even if they win the division. But the fact is they can win the division. It's possible. And usually with a 2-5 team, you're talking about when do we turn our attention to next year and the draft and all this. And you don't have to do that right now, because these games are still very meaningful for this team coming up.
Well, that's the key thing, is you're delaying the look ahead.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Maybe you delay it into the postseason, right? It is possible. Indy has played bad football this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, all this said, I'd be surprised if they win Sunday. I'd be surprised if we're having this conversation on December 5th.
Let's say they lose Sunday, right? And they're 2-6.
Not out of it.
They're still probably going to be a game out of the division.
And here's why. Is the next two games are non-division games. Basically, you can lose all the rest of your games.
Close to it, right? If you win your four division games, six and ten is probably not going to do it, I think.
I mean,
either.
if you win your four division games and win one other game,
right?
7-9, probably do it.
Certainly has a decent percentage chance.
I think it's a race to seven. The AFC South is the race to seven. I don't see the Colts with that schedule, especially if the teams in the division start beating them at some point. They're not going to get to eight. If anybody in the AFC South stands up and starts beating the Colts too, they're not going to get to eight, because they've been terrible outside the division, and really haven't been good outside the division even when they've been winning division championships the last 3 years. And we talked about momentum. And can it carry over from, you know, that win against Buffalo through the 2 weeks in the bye week? I don't know if the team's momentum can, but the fans that on that Monday, after they found a way to win that game at the end, were still upset with his football team and Gus Bradley and the idea that that guy won one more game, so now he may be sticking around. Their momentum is stuck up, right? I mean, they are still here almost two weeks later getting ready for this Jets game. They're still sitting there going, why is anyone complimenting this football team right now? Because they deserve some compliment for finding a way to win that game, and they are stuck still in contention in a terrible division. Nobody has said the Jacksonville Jaguars are a good football team. Nobody has said that. They're bad. They're a bad football team. They're a flawed football team in a division with three other very flawed football teams.
If you're going to root for a bad football team, Tony, isn't it more fun to think, hey, maybe we can have a bad football team that can host a playoff game, for goodness sakes? It would be amazing, you know, because at that point, nobody cares what your record is. Look, again, no one's even predicting that, but to think that because the discussion is taking place and you look at the possibilities and all the different variables that go into it, you're trying to shove some line of thinking into people's minds. You're hearing what you want to hear.
Well, the key is, okay, look at, is there going to be a team in this division? I'm throwing out Tennessee. Is there going to be a team who can reel off three straight wins?
If they can, they might run away with it.
Carolina last year was 3-8-1 and won their last four. I think that team is going to be Houston, because I think O'Brien is finally getting out of his own way, you know, because they have no choice but to stick with Hoyer. He gives them the best chance. I think Watt woke up against Tennessee. I think that's the team most capable of winning the division. Let's see if they can, you know, get their head out of you-know-what to do it.
We'll see, too, with them, because obviously Arian Foster's a big loss for that football team, you know, and can Alfred Blue and company do enough to keep the pressure off DeAndre Hopkins so he can keep putting up those big numbers?
And I stick a fork in the Colts, not because of the I think they're going to get a boost from the coordinator change. I just think there's too much going on behind the scenes
With Pagano being a lame duck.
Yeah, I mean, will he even be the coach when they come here?
We will close with this this segment with this text on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We win, Batman drinks. We lose, Batman drinks. We go to the playoffs, Batman goes streaking downtown. Has this been made known to the Jaguar players themselves, to the 53-man roster? Are they aware of this incentive that is out there for them? And would this have the desired effect if I were to tell them that you could make this happen? I would think this is something we all should be rooting for at this point in time. As much public nudity as we could possibly get in celebration of the Jaguars, I will not agree to join it. And you will all be glad for that. I don't think anybody else in this room is exactly stepping up to the front of the line either. We will come back. Let's hear from the head coach, Gus Bradley, and the quarterback, Blake Bortles, with their weekly midweek press conferences in the books. We'll give you some of their thoughts coming up next. 641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on board with Rhino Howard and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Ty, we still have Chris on the line. He's been hanging there for a while. All right, let's get Chris in real quick, then let's get to Blake Bortles and Gus Bradley, your head coach and quarterback in reverse order of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Howard, and Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars, today on this Thursday morning. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing?
Good. What's up?
Man, I'm calling to ask about number 35, man, Demetrius McCray. What happened? Because from my opinion, from what I seen last year, he was Jacksonville's best cornerback out there. So I just want to know, like, how did he fall out of favor? Like, what happened? I don't know.
Well, it's a good question. One that I asked yesterday, and I asked Gus, I said, is McCray in the mix with House and Gratz for that position? He said he was, and they feel he just wasn't playing tight enough coverage and getting enough plays on the ball, which I don't think a lot of those guys are doing.
Let's play his answer to Ryan's question.
My question was, what does McCray have to show you to get back in that rotation?
Here's what
his
he had
skill
to say.
Set, his length, you know, I think it's probably with all of them, especially with a guy like McCray and Gratz, I think they're really good technicians. I think they do the technique. They can get even better at it, but I think that ability to make plays, you know, when their number's called and they're playing a fade route or they're playing a route, you know, to finish and finishing with the opportunity to be more aggressive, you know, get that pick, turn it into an interception. I think that's the challenging part for them. I saw that today. I did see that, especially from Gratz. He had a pretty good practice in that matter.
Well, they always say these guys have good practices. What I followed up by saying, I said, do your corners need to be more aggressive? Because you remember all the offseason, Gus was talking about tighter coverage, more plays on the ball, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's not happening. He goes, more aggressive going for the ball without giving up the principles. Let's go to that cut.
I think that sometimes you're playing the technique, you stay on top, and you get a PBU. You know, but we need to turn those PBUs into interceptions. And, you know, a guy like House has more than anybody. So I think it's really the challenge for all the group is to take advantage of those opportunities, you know, and it's one thing to do the technique, but always look for your opportunities. We call them greedy ops. You know, when you know a play is coming and you have an idea because of the set and all the indicators are there, that's your time to make a play. And I think we got to take advantage of more of those opportunities when they show up.
Well, you mentioned Devon House. That's why he should be starting. You know, he's the guy breaking up passes. You would see the percentage was – would weigh to, okay, if you're breaking up passes, eventually you're going to catch one of those passes. So that would be what I wouldn't have made that change in the first place. I would go back to House right now. I don't think Dwayne Gratz was being exposed as a third corner. He was exposed as a number two corner.
Pretty badly as well this past game. Let's get to Blake Bortles here as he spoke yesterday, his weekly press conference, and was asked about wanting to improve on opening drives. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, you know, Ole talks about all the time, being able to start fast. So it's what we want to do. It's definitely kind of, you know, our makeup and what we preach and who we want to be. You know, so I think we've done a good job and we practice it. You know, we go in the first play of every period. We want it to be a good explosive play, something positive. So it's you know, I wouldn't say for any rhyme or reason why we haven't, you know, had success on the first drive, but it's definitely something we want to get better at.
I would come out and play tempo. What you're doing hasn't worked. They try, another thing that Greg Olsen mentioned yesterday is they gotta be better running it on first and 10. Right now they're about 25th, 26th in the league in that category. I wouldn't try and run on first and 10 off the gate. I'd come out, go no huddle, see if the defense, see if you can get the defense on their heels a little bit with some surprise plays and see if you can get going that way.
Especially because you hear one of the reasons that they don't do that more, other than in real two-minute situations, is that if you go three and out, you're putting your defense right back on the field. But at the beginning of the game,
they're rested.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the time to go out and do it. And who's to say you're not going to pick up a couple of first downs anyway and extend those drives? And I know the thinking has been, well, if we can get one first down, we get a new set of downs, and maybe we play a little bit of tempo here, and then the defense gets a chance to get a rest. But again, at the beginning of the game, there's no reason to worry about that.
Within your comment there, you piled on to what you were saying earlier. The expectation here is, well, they're just going to go three and out. Well, just be convince yourself if you go tempo, you're going to get a first down.
Right.
Don't expect the worst to happen.
Because you've been good doing that. So
have confidence that if you put your offense in no huddle, hurry up to start the game, that they'll be able to move down the field and not hang your defense out to dry. So it's almost like they have to change that mentality themselves.
Blake Bortles, speaking yesterday, also talked about looking back at the Jets game this weekend against Oakland and if the film showed him what the Raiders did to expose that Jets defense.
I thought, Oakland had a good plan. They did, kind of everything, really well. They ran the ball well. They threw the ball well. You know, they got movement up front, on the Jets' good defensive line. So it was impressive to watch, So I think, there's kind of some things you can take here and there from different teams. But, I think overall we're going to, be who we are and do what we do best.
Yeah, I do agree with what Dan Hicken said earlier at the top of the show, where you're going to get a focused effort out of the Jets. There's no excuses. You lose in the NFL. But there are realities that these players are human, and when you have a division game that's a big rivalry game, and I'm sure you're hyping your head, you go to New England, you play them tough, and you lose it in the fourth quarter, and you make that trip all the way out to the West Coast, and they got punched in the mouth in the passing game and the running game last week. They didn't stop anything very convincingly.
Yeah, and I think there's an opening for this Jaguar offense in the passing game. For the Jets, they've spent so much money on their defense, but they're at 11 sacks, tied for third least in the league through seven games, so... And they don't have a lot of picks either.
Well, this dovetails with what Blake Bortles was asked next, which is the Jets' defensive front. Here's what he had to say.
Super talented. Obviously, getting Richardson back, kind of allows them to get back into some of what they want to do. So they got four or five guys up front that are big, big guys, kind of big run stoppers, clog holes and get after the passer. So they do a good job. And then, the scheme obviously kind of fits the personnel that they have. So it's definitely a good group. It's kind of, a little similar to the group last week in Buffalo, or 2 weeks ago in Buffalo. Good front four, good front seven. So it'll be a challenge.
Look, they do have talent. There's no question they have talent. But it has not, as you pointed out, translated into pass rushing productivity. Their secondary has been talented enough to make up for that, and they haven't been, usually you have that much time to get rid of the football. You've got somewhere to go with it. That's not always the case with New York, with Revis and Cromartie and Buster Screen back there.
No, it's certainly not. Bortles being asked the question, how dare the local media asked this question to a guy on a 2-5 football team about how he feels about being in the AFC South race at this point.
You guys talked about it this morning. It's an unbelievable opportunity. But, I don't think we look at it any differently than if we were 0-7 or 7-0. We treat this game the same way. I think that's kind of the culture and the mindset everybody has. So I think it's cool to be, obviously, fortunate enough to be at 2-5 and end the talk, right? So I think, but the guys do a good job of making sure that, this is, our championship game just like it is every other week.
Good quote there from him. So you're fortunate to be in the talk.
Yes, but you know what, Ryan? This must be a first in NFL history. A team has admitted that, we look at the standings, and it's only week 9 in the National Football League. You're allowed to look at those factors and maybe use them to inspire your team and say, guys, it has been rough. We're 2-5. We've kicked our own ass a few times. We have not lived up to our standards. Nobody's happy with the record. But let's not lose sight of the big picture, because imagine if we were 6-1 and we were a half game out. We'd be excited to play this game this weekend, right? So let's go out there and take advantage. It's still out there ahead of you. And I love the fact that Gus Bradley is not afraid to mention, hey, you're in the picture here. Let's look at the big picture, because I think coaches and players probably do it a lot more than they like you to believe. And they always tell you, well, our focus is laser-like on the next opponent we have this week.
I don't read anything.
Jim Caldwell doesn't read anything. No, well, he doesn't read anything, yet he knows that the Detroit media is the most negative in the National Football League. They all read everything.
I mean, when he says that's a room, dungeon room.
Dungeon of Doom or something like that.
I would have taken that as a compliment.
Yeah, you. I was thinking of you when I heard that quote, as a matter of fact.
Jim Caldwell is overmatched as a head coach in Indianapolis, and he's showing he's overmatched as a head coach in Detroit.
Let's skip ahead to the final comment from Blake Bortles talking about Darrelle Revis and the problems he brings and presents to an offense.
You can tell watching him, you know, he's an aggressive corner. He loves to play man. He loves being press coverage, and he's good at it. You know, he's been good at it for many years. So they do switch him up. They'll do some different things and back him up a little bit and play him in zone. But, you know, I think he likes playing man, and, you know, as a corner and a competitor, I'm sure most guys do. So it's good to watch. You know, I think our guys are excited for the opportunity with him and Cromartie, two good corners. So I think it'll be fun, a good chance to go against, you know, two guys that are proven corners and, you know, have been around for a long time.
Yeah, we'll see. Darrelle Revis, I'm not sure that he's the same player he has been for the past several years. I know Logman said he looked pretty good on tape on Tuesday when he was in here with us. I heard Darren Woodson, and I don't know how much I trust Darren Woodson as far as breaking down tape, but he is a former secondary player in the National Football League. Earlier this week on Mike and Mike, before I left the house to come here and do the show.
Tony.
Right.
We're not supposed to mention that show on this air.
But
why?
We're
the ESPN affiliate, technically.
Right. But he said that he was watching the tape of that Oakland game against the Jets, and that if they had wanted to target Darrelle Revis, Amari Cooper could have had 190 yards. Could have killed him. It was just they kind of just avoided that because they didn't need to. You know, it was working in other areas of the game on Sunday, but he had questions about where Darrelle Revis is right now far as just a shutdown guy.
I can't speak for that
find
game.
Out.
Well, I can't speak for that game, but I will say I watch enough film breakdown of him this year that, to me, because I don't see him every week either.
He's great against the Colts.
He's
I know that.
Been playing at a pretty damn high level
yeah.
this year.
I mean,
you know, that last week notwithstanding.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know. Gus Bradley, head coach, also speaking yesterday, and this is what he had to say to open things up.
Really, really good practice day. Very challenging. More like I think we're accustomed to, I think because of the health of our team. We came out and did one-on-ones, receivers and DBs. We did a one-on-one drill with our O-line and D-line. We did a team segment of competition. So a lot of things like that that we can do now, more apt to do it with the health of our team. So all those were really good positives. It was pretty warm out there today, so that was a challenging aspect too. So appreciate how the guys competed all the way through it. So good progress today. Really liked what we did on Monday. I think what we did on Monday helped us ensure a good practice today.
Oh, they did get the extra little bit of work in on Monday, which is a bonus coming out of the bye week.
This will probably be their last practice in pads for a while because they have the next week and then the short week.
Right. You only get, what, like 14 of them
during
the season?
Yeah,
something
and
like
they
that?
Didn't use one last week. Obviously, then they didn't use one the week of the Buffalo game.
But basically, it works out to less than one per game to prepare throughout the course of the regular season. Let's play these two back-to-back, Tyler. This is Gus, again, talking about what we were talking about a moment ago. Has he talked to the team about the AFC South standings, and then he was asked to elaborate a little bit more of it. So let's just play these two comments back-to-back.
I didn't get into the standings. I'm sure they all know that. I did talk about, you know, the opportunity that we have. I acknowledge that in front of the team. I think there's talk about it and say, that's great. It's a great opportunity. So we acknowledge it, and then we just kind of brought it back to, all right, let's respect today and get back. You know, I think we have a real disciplined process that we go through, and I think the team really believes in that part of it. So the challenge was we acknowledged it, talked about it, and then we came back and then just went back to work. So it was pretty good, though. It was pretty cool for the team. Well, I think because there's talk. You know, I'm sure they're – you don't want to be naive to think. They look at it. They understand some of the things that are going on. So I think it's better to acknowledge those feelings. I think it's sometimes when you talk to a player and he said, you know, I'm really nervous. And you go, no, you shouldn't be nervous. No, it's okay if he's nervous. You know, you acknowledge it, and then you just move on from it. I think that's generally can happen. I think the same philosophy with this. Hey, you acknowledge it. It's really cool. All right, now let's go back to work.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong in acknowledging it. It doesn't help you win this week, and that's the point. And look, I guarantee you there are a lot of people out there right now that are screaming because I think there is a segment of the fan base that has checked out on Gus Bradley. Now, whether or not he can recapture them or not, time will tell, because winning cures a lot of ills, but
they're almost all of them.
Right, practically all of them. But there, you know, there was a segment, Ryan, that wanted change. They were unhappy when Shad Khan definitively came out and said nothing's going to happen during this year. And then, despite the fact that they won, they'll point to, yeah, but they almost lost in, you know, comeback fashion. They let the Bills come back. You know, it happens. I'm not saying it's preferable, but again, look towards Monday night. You know, everyone's, oh, they almost blew it against the Bills. Well, Carolina almost blew it against the Colts. But they didn't, did they? They won the game. And no one's sitting here saying, how could the Panthers let that terrible Colts team back in the game? The Colts are no better than the Bills right now. And granted, they had Andrew Luck in there, and whereas E.J. Manuel is playing for Buffalo, but neither one of them is a very good team right now. And you dominated that team for a large percentage of the game. And sometimes that happens. Even good teams, and Carolina, I think, has proven at this point they're a good team, can take their foot off the gas pedal and get a little bit lax, and it happens because this is the NFL, and there's talent on every roster in the National Football League. So the bottom line is Carolina won the game, and nobody's sitting here bemoaning the fact that they let the Colts back into it.
Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be that vocal minority who the wins aren't going to change their mind.
Right.
But they have kept quiet since they beat Buffalo.
And, you know, some of them have. Not all of them on my Twitter feed. Come hop in my Twitter feed every once in a while. All right, let's take a timeout. We'll come back. We've got the question of the day, which asked you which Jet poses the biggest problems for the Jaguars this week. Chris Ivory, Brandon Marshall, Darrell Revis. We've had some off-the-board submissions put in as well. We'll get to your feedback on that, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony, maybe a few more from Gus Bradley as well before we close up shop today on Jaguars Today. Live at Everbank, it is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the home stretch here, Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. I haven't checked with David Garrard. We'll see if he's coming in tomorrow. We'll look at keys to victory, as we do every Friday when the Jaguars play as they get ready to take on the New York Jets this weekend. Couple more here from Gus Bradley yesterday, and we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight. We found out yesterday, Todd Bowles said definitively, yep, Ryan Fitzpatrick will be good to go. He was practicing. He will start. You kind of had an indication they knew, they felt good about at least one of those QBs when they didn't work anybody out early this week, with Bryce Petty being the only alternative.
Yeah, I mean, when they were, you know, when Florio was saying during the game that the Jets were making calls.
Right.
You're like, well, Fitzpatrick has to be out.
Right, which was understandable, but I guess they got, as you know, they found out they put a glove on the hand. He's going to be able to deal with it. We'll see if it becomes an issue, though, right? Ball security, whether in the pocket, if you can get a couple of hits on him, or whether it's just handing the ball to Chris Ivory, whatever the case may be.
I mean, if you're only, and I talked to Chad Henne about this yesterday, if you're only able to hand off with your right hand, in theory, that cuts off your
running to the right side.
Running to the right.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to pitch it. But, okay, how much can he do any play action stuff, you know, with the left hand? So if I'm them, if I'm the Jags, I test them as much as possible.
Haven't we seen a quarterback, Tony, in recent years in college, I want to say, that had a bad left hand that was handing off with his right hand? Do you remember what
it was? Carson Palmer.
Was that what it was?
2009. Had a bad left wrist.
And what was he doing? Like turning it over backwards?
Yeah, he was doing like that.
And handing it off? Did he have any ball secure, any fumbles? Do you remember?
I looked up a story. It didn't. The only story I could find is when he was getting ready to do it.
Right.
So I couldn't find whether it was a disaster.
Gotcha. All right. Well, here's what Gus Bradley had to say yesterday about facing Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, he's decisive. He makes decisions and he goes with it. And I think he has a sense of poise back there. You see him make good decisions. And, you know, I think the team really believes in him. He makes quick decisions, regardless if there's pressure or not. And I think he has the ability to run with the ball, so he's a threat there. You know, you wouldn't think that with him, but it shows up on tape. So I think, you know, he's just, you know, plays very well for him. I think there's a lot of trust in him.
Let's not kid ourselves. Ryan Fitzpatrick has been an erratic quarterback throughout his NFL career. But this year, he's played under control for the most part, Tony, and I think a lot of that has to do with a strong running game. With Chris Ivory back there and having the weapons that he has to throw to as well.
No doubt. And Gus Bradley was asked about Chris Ivory and that matchup with him coming up on Sunday as well.
All right. We don't have that one on Chris Ivory. I think Gus said, here's what Gus said. He's a powerful guy. He's a very aggressive runner.
Run strong.
It's important to him.
It's important to Chris Ivory. All right, let's hear what Gus had to say about it.
Well, he's very physical and tough runner.
See?
You know, he can make something out of nothing, and, you know, his will, I think, is what shows up. So definitely have to have a tackling plan for him. A lot of guys to the ball, taking good angles.
What are the Gus...
tackling plan?
What are his go-tos?
Yeah, have a tackling.
What's the tackling plan?
Yeah, we just get him to the ground.
We
right?
tackle him.
Send you know, but I.
It's like the Broncos coming out of the Green Bay game. What was your plan this week in the secondary? We were going to cover them longer. What? What right. does that mean? You don't cover everybody as long as you can every week.
Nope.
I don't get it.
One more from Gus. Skipping ahead, talking about health in the bye week. Did the bye week give the Jaguars a chance to get a little bit more rested and healthy?
Yeah, I think so. Because really, you know, we're looking at like guy like Marquise and Zane Beatles. You know, but everybody else, I mean, when I look at one-on-ones and I'm seeing routes on air and the number of receivers that we have and the number of DBs, it's always good. It's always good.
All right, Dan Leberfeld, by the way, of JetsConfidential.com, joins us tomorrow to preview the Jags' latest opponent. And this coming out on the Jets' Twitter account yesterday, Ryan Fitzpatrick talking about his thumb, quote, "It's painful enough to get me out of changing diapers, that is the one positive." So he's got that. Honey, I can go play NFL football, and all of you out there can watch football at a high level, if you know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And but I can't change the diapers. Don't think I haven't used something similar to that. It's always work, Tony. Are you watching the game? It's work, honey. Although now I don't get away with that so much anymore with the NBA and stuff like that.
Right.
All right. Question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asks you which Jet poses the biggest threat to the Jags. Chris Ivory, Brandon Marshall, Darrell Revis, assuming they're all healthy. Tony, what do we get?
Here's what we got from Joe. Chris Ivory, unless Grotz is lining up against Brandon Marshall. From Joey, Ivory, depending on which defense shows up, they can be weak against the run. From Cristiano, Ivory still can't forget Doug Martin's performance against the Jaguars' defense. From Daniel, Darrell Revis, by far, mainly due to Bortles' pick six history, is why I'm going this way. From Eric, it's Revis. He'll shut down the wide receiver he's on and can bait Bortles into more interceptions. From
so
Michael,
negative.
The one that flies us up there. Oh, hash brown, hashtag hash brown selfie, hashtag shut up Randy. From Duval Doom, if he plays, I say Marshall. He's still very good, especially if the quarterback is untouched, which he generally is. From Black Dog, the only Jet I see given the Jaguars' problems is a 757 going to New York because the Jags will dominate. Or Brandon Marshall.
Right. I got on Facebook, let's see, I won't read all the commentary, but just the votes. Chris went with off the board with Fitzpatrick because he said he always rips us apart. Lee Markham said Revis. Ryan went with Brandon Marshall. Tony went with Revis. Cameron went with Brandon Marshall. Steve said Ivory, no doubt. See, I think it's a good question, right? They're all pretty big threats because there's a lot of no doubt or no question about it. It's this guy, and then the very next response would be someone else from somebody else. And it was pretty even across the board. Ryan, how would you rank the threat? What's the big, whether it's these individuals or not, what's the biggest concern or concerns you have for the Jags this weekend?
I think it's put them in order here. Marshall would be my pick because a lot of these Hopkins has been able to do whatever he wanted. Patriots had success. Jarvis Landry had success. So a lot of big plays allowed in the passing game. But the Jaguar offense, if the run game doesn't go well early, then what? Do you want to stay committed to it? Do you want to be balanced, or do you just want to put it in Blake's hands and see if he can attack these defensive backs?
And, you know, even with a team that doesn't get a lot of sacks, if you get into a routine of they're going to be dropping back, you can get that pass rush started when they know it's coming a little bit. So you got to be careful with that.
You know, and if you're playing Tyler Shatley left guard with no Zane Beatles, he may give it a shot today. Jets send a lot of different looks pressure-wise. Bowles Arizona led the league in blitzes last year, so he's carried some of that over. And some of Rex's system is still there, too. So a lot of things for Bortles to look at.
All right, now back to the important question that we teased much earlier. It is National Donut Day. I need your top three donuts. Ryan O'Halloran, what do you got?
If I'm driving by the Dunkin' Donuts, I'll usually pull up. And I'll get a Boston cream.
Boston cream.
I like the double chocolate.
Double chocolate.
And I like the French crawler.
Crawler. Yeah, French crawler. Yeah. All right, that's a pretty boring one, right? That's okay.
I'm not... but it's like I like the it's like
kind of a little glaze on it.
Yeah.
Tony, you got a top three donuts for you?
Not really. I'm not like crazy about donuts. I prefer just a glazed donut. If I'm gonna have a donut, that's the honest truth.
Probably a glazed donut.
Yeah.
If anybody at the Dunkin' Donuts in Southside on Southside by the movie theaters listening, I would really like the French donut to have chocolate on it. If you call in and say that you have those today, I'll come by.
How about that? Call in now at 641-1010. All you Dunkin' Donuts proprietors out there, I'm gonna go with the Bavarian, which is delicious. You got to be cold too. I like to get them. Throw them in the fridge for a few hours.
Especially that.
The Bavarian guys, yes, right? Yes. I like a good old cinnamon twist, right? Always delicious. And then the best is just the chocolate frosting. Not the cake donut, but like the glazed donut, yes, with the chocolate frosting. Don't need the sprinkles, but I won't turn it down if it has sprinkles,
sure,
on it.
This is what I've heard is that when Dunkin' Donuts, when they have the chocolate chip cookie dough, cream.
Yeah.
Oh. I hear it's great.
Have you heard? the spies tell you.
Sources.
What do you have coming up this weekend in the Florida Times Union in terms of Jaguar coverage?
Update on Sendarek Marks tomorrow. He says he's feeling better. Sunday's paper will have talked to a bunch of defensive backs. Okay, how can they get more interceptions? How can, you know, is it the scheme? Is it guys just not being around the football? And then I'll tackle some of the Greg Olsen topics, including what he wants to do improvement-wise on third down.
All right, and check out Hayes Carline's article in there. As you mentioned earlier, was an interesting one.
Very entertaining.
On the Jags' chances, pro and cons, against each of the remaining opponents on the schedule, and kind of ranking the difficulty of the games on a scale of, I think it was...
1 to 10?
Right, but 1 was
Detroit
at home, yeah. 10 was the Patriots on the road, being the most and least difficult you could face right now, and where the rest of them fall in there. You'll enjoy that as well at jacksonville.com in the sports section. Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, on Twitter at Ryan O'Halloran. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys.
There he goes. For Ryan O'Halloran, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato. That's about going to do it here for Jaguars today. Thanks to all of our callers, our listeners, and all of our great sponsors out there as well. That wraps it up. We've got XL Primetime coming your way in mere moments. Joe C. Hacker and T-Wig coming up on 1010XL 92.5 FM.